And welcome back to Midday. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us for the second hour of our show. That music means it's time again for Midday on Media with Baltimore Sun media critic David Zurowick, my colleague from Calvin Street, who produces the Zeon TV blog, joins us here for Midday on Media, the third Wednesday of every month, and it's on the Google Calendar. That's how he remembers to get here. Hello, David. Nice to see you.
Hey, Dan. Nice to see you.
We have a lot of ground to cover today.
Yeah.
A lot of topics to cover. I want to say to our listeners, if anything David talks about during this hour strikes your fancy, and please call in and comment or ask a question, even if we've moved on to a different subject, because we'll move on kind of quickly here. A lot of things to talk about today. We'll look at Diane Sawyer leaving ABC World News as their anchor. We got some news coverage that you're going to assess, news coverage of the violence in Gaza. Also, the coverage of the border crisis here in the United States.
Yep.
So we'll get to that. And Pam Oliver, the Fox Sports decision to move Pam Oliver, who's been on the NFL sidelines for Fox nearly 20 years, done a great job, being replaced by the much younger woman, Erin Andrews. And that has sparked a controversy. And we'll talk about that, too. But first, David, I want to go to this subject of a Supreme Court ruling that occurred late last month. We didn't get a chance to talk about a Supreme Court ruling that the Internet streaming service Aereo, A-E-R-E-O. I don't know if our listeners are familiar with it or not. But anyway, that it was out there for a couple of years, a startup company. The Supreme Court ruled that it was acting illegally when it transmitted television shows that its tiny antennas captured for free. That the supposedly tiny antennas, I don't know what that means on the internet. I'm not sure I understand this. But this decision was considered a major victory for the broadcasters, mainstream broadcasters and cable companies. And this comes at a time when the whole landscape of how we watch TV is changing. We've talked about that. We've talked about video streaming.
Yeah, sure.
So anyway, the Aereo case, what do you understand about this company?
Here's at least the way it stands now, Dan. And a lot of this stuff, especially with new technology, and this always kills me because tech men and women don't say this, that you talk in metaphors. Everything is metaphor, you know. So, if somebody would explain to you the tiny antenna metaphor they're using, and that really is in a way the secret to this.
This is what Aereo claimed.
Yes.
Right, that it was a conventional broadcaster and that its customers had a tiny antenna capturing this TV on the internet.
Except, and here is the issue. Here's two thoughts that I think will sort it out, because this can get so sort of confusing and convoluted. And it did. Some of the justices in the Supreme Court were like, when you read their comments, they clearly weren't following what was happening here. But here's what's going on. Number one, think about this in terms of a copyright issue and owning content, paying for content and owning content. That's one thought to take with you. Then in terms of the technology, the tiny antenna issue, the tiny antenna metaphor works this way. What Aereo was doing was taking signals over the air, okay?
Capturing content.
Okay? Other people's content, number one. Mm. And then they were sending it to what they described themselves in the Supreme Court case as tiny antennas that each person bought. So all they were saying is, hey, we're just essentially letting this stream go to those antennas. It's free. Information want to be free over the airwaves, rights of the people own the airwaves, blah, blah, blah. But what they were doing was, think of it this way, stealing other people's content that other people paid for and then storing it on these little antennas for you to access when you wanted to. That's on demand. That's a good idea. It was a great idea.
Right.
But really what it came down to, essentially, what the Supreme Court said you're doing is you are stealing other people's stuff and then holding it in a little room for the people who pay you less than it's worth to come and pick up when they want to. That's what was going on with Aereo. Now, Aereo has all the prejudice that we have about any new technology on their side. People, I hate Comcast. They charge me this.
Right.
They never come when I call.
Right.
Here's a guy who's giving it to everything in the world for $8 a month.
But he's not paying for the content.
He's not paying for the
content. That's the problem.
And that's the content. So, you know, when you say about sports broadcasts, too, you know, now.
All right, let me tell you what. Yeah, I find this so interesting because I've been playing around more with video streaming to see what's out there. And pardon me, but I just recently discovered ESPN Watch, ESPN 3, and all these sports programs that are offered on your tablet or smartphone.
Yes.
I find it kind of amazing.
It is.
How much is out there?
It's unbelievable.
It leads me to ask the question, why isn't there more of it? Why can't I watch an Orioles game, for instance, online? Why can't I listen to one online? WBAL Radio carries the Orioles. I have a contract with the Orioles broadcast, right? If you go to WBAL online
you can't
during an
it.
Orioles game, you get a talk show. You get some conservative guy talk show, right?
Okay.
You don't get... I know you, and I know you know the answer to this.
Well,
so I'm asking you. I just wonder why there isn't all out there.
No, I haven't thought of this. I haven't explored this particular matter. As you're saying this, I'm saying, well, that's a good question. I bet a lot of people
wonder. If it's legit, if they paid for the content.
Well, and my answer is, and I have to check this. I mean, before I would print this or publish it, I'd have to check it out. But my guess is this: that this you can say with some certainty. The people who hold the rights to that game, the Orioles, did not allow in their contract with BAL for them to live stream it.
I understand.
They only let them broadcast it.
The question is why?
Over the air.
At this point in life, why is that? I mean,
I think they probably don't want to fragment that audience anymore. And don't forget, baseball teams pretty much across the board, I think across the board totally, are set up now like the Orioles, where the team owner also owns the cable channel, the primary outlet.
Yeah, I know.
And that is really, now, but here's the thing.
I'm looking at it at a business point of view.
Well, that's what people forget.
Ears, aren't they? I mean, if I'm listening to the Orioles online, I'm listening to the Orioles on the radio. You talk about fragmentation, but still I'm listening.
Well, but you have to figure out a way to monetize that radio, that stream. You know how to monetize the broadcast.
I say get with it.
Well,
get with it.
Okay, but
this is what we said about newspapers, right?
Yes, yes.
You have to figure out how to monetize newspapers online. Radio stations need to figure out how to do that too.
Except radio sports broadcasts and TV sports broadcasts are not saying, "Oh my God, we have to figure out how to work in digital space." They will at some point. You're just ahead of the curve. But Dan, you and I were,
did you just say I was ahead of the curve?
Yeah, maybe. That's a shock.
Oh, man, you just made my day.
but you were talking about ESPN3 and all that content.
Yeah, amazing. I watched a cricket game the other day. I watched the World Lacrosse Championship in Denver the other day.
For me, I'm a college baseball nut. I love college baseball. So when all those games were playing last month, all the different
that's all on there. Softball and college baseball.
Yeah, softball too. Yeah, mm-hmm. And you couldn't get some of the teams I care about. Weren't on ESPN, ESPN, ESPN2, or even ESPNU.
Right.
But they were online almost. In fact, every game that was played in the conference tournaments and the regional tournaments and the super regionals all the way to the World Series in Omaha, you could watch at ESPN3. You could stream it. Well, here's what people forget is ESPN has to pay the NCAA for the rights to even put it online. And then, Dan, they have to pay for a full camera crew and people in the booth to announce
announcers,
it. That's a lot of money. So when Arrow comes along and says, well, I'm just going to take this and give it to my people, that's what's wrong with it.
Katrina in Baltimore with a comment about the Arrow decision by the Supreme Court. Hi, Katrina.
Hi. I'm so excited you took my call. My point with the Arrow is that it's not giving other people's content. All it's giving is the content that is free to be gotten just over the airwaves, so how anybody can have Fox or CBS or ABC. It's only providing those channels that
you could pick up with an antenna.
Right. They're only providing channels that you could already get with an antenna, and they're providing you with a DVR service as well. So they are not infringing, in my opinion, on anybody's right, because they aren't giving anything that you couldn't have already.
Oh, okay. I understand exactly the Talmudic thing they're trying to do there, Katrina. But let me give you the other side of that argument, the side that won. or at least for the time being, was accepted by the Supreme Court. It's this. Let's say NBC, a show on NBC that people want to watch, The Tonight Show. NBC sends that show in Baltimore to WBAL Television, which is its NBC affiliate. WBAL in Baltimore pays millions of dollars in rights fees to NBC to be its affiliate and get the chance to carry those programs from the network and, of course, sell ads. Their game is they think they can sell more money in ads than what they have to pay NBC for content. It is not unlike, except for the advertising model, it's not unlike what NPR does with a station like WYPR. WYPR has to pay NPR to carry Morning Edition, and it's a lot of money. That's not cheap. Mm. So what's happening is Ariel comes along and says, oh, no, we're only taking local signals. No, you're taking the BAL signal. It's being sent to BAL. It's not being beamed over the airwaves, by the way. They're doing it. They're sending it either, well, they would be using satellite now, but for a time there was actually a cable, but now it's all satellite. But so it is technically over there. But they're sending it from their transmitter to BAL's transmitter. Then BAL sends it over the airwaves to this market. And that's where it's being captured, if that's their local argument. So they're taking a signal. They're taking shows, they're copying shows that BAL paid for the right to air.
All right. Thank you, David. Sarah Crumby tweeted us. She says, I watch a lot of baseball and work in public radio. This is what's on her Twitter, Sarah, and I thank you for tweeting us. She says, Major League Baseball distributes all radio feeds online, costs $19.99 for all MLB radio season for an entire season. No blackouts.
There you go. That's their business model. That's why you can't. That's a great. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Yeah. And I kind of knew that a little bit.
Oh, but well, great.
I've been resisting doing that because I don't know.
I thought I'd come on and go, those thieves, they got to stop that. They must give it to you free, Dad. Don't you know information wants to be free? We all want free information.
I don't want it free. Actually, I wouldn't mind if WBAL, a local radio station with local advertising.
Yeah.
Right?
Right, right.
Charged me a little bit for that. I wouldn't mind paying that. Paying Major League Baseball, I'm not that crazy about it. But okay, I'll do it maybe.
But that's because
I'm in places sometimes where I can't pick up the Orioles on the radio and I want to listen online. But the TV is another whole thing. Why isn't there a live stream of all baseball games online? Or is there? Am I missing something again?
Again.
Sarah, help me out.
Again. No, again, it's absolutely, it's the same thing, Dan, we face in the newspaper. It's somebody trying to control their content in a way that they can monetize it. Major League Baseball said, rather than giving them rights to stream this stuff to each of these stations, forget it. We'll control it. We know how to handle it, so it's not going to get out. You know, mm-hmm. So if you want to see it, you're going to pay for it. I suspect it's the same thing here in terms of this. It's people who have content that the public wants, trying to maintain control of it in an incredibly fragmented, technologically juiced, technologically exploded environment where, you know, almost anything goes. So that's what's going on. So Arrow, but you understand.
I understand where we are with Arrow.
Okay.
One more comment about this. This is Andy. He says the Orioles and the rest of Major League Baseball are not broadcast on the internet because MLB prohibits it.
Yes. Yeah, that's what we said at first. Yeah.
You can buy the MLB stream, but they won't give it away. I understand that. Sort of reminds me of MLB's fear of radio and television years ago.
But they're there.
Because they were worried that people wouldn't come to the ballpark if you put it on the radio.
Oh no, but I don't think that's it. That was years ago. Yeah, but it's streamed. They're not afraid they're going to lose people at the ballpark. They just want to make sure if you hear it online, you're paying for it, pal. Mm. That's it.
Okay.
Because you know what? I would think the same thing.
No, I think that's legit. I'd rather pay the local entity, I guess.
See, but you know, but
listen to what I just said. No, I'd rather pay Peter Angelos.
But you know, but
what
you,
am I talking
but
about?
You know how they think in New York. But you know how they think in New York or Silicon Valley or Los Angeles is. Hey, we let this content out to the Yahoo local guys. They won't know how to protect it. They'll get. Yeah. You know, it'll be people will be hearing it everywhere. You know.
David Zerwick, it's Midday on Media. Dan Roderick's here. Feel free to give us a call. We got to talk about Diane Sawyer, Pam Oliver, news coverage of Gaza, news coverage of the border crisis in the United States. A short break. We'll be right back. You can reach us at 410-662-8780. Send us an email, midday@wypr.org. And as Sarah Crumby knows, we're on Twitter at @MiddayWYPR. Welcome back to Midday on Media. Dan Roderick's here with my colleague from The Sun, David Zerwick, the media critic of The Sun, who wrote on July 3rd about this crisis in the Middle East that started in June with the abduction of three Israeli teens whose bodies were discovered a few weeks later in early this month. And then following that, the Palestinian teen who was abducted and killed. David, commenting on the news coverage of this story, wrote that it was a complex and highly emotional story, and no one on American TV did a better job of telling it than Al Jazeera America, the new kid on the cable news block that will celebrate its first anniversary in August. It has been a rough year for Al Jazeera America, with lower ratings than even some of its harshest critics predicted, and layoffs in April. But if anyone with an open mind was looking for evidence as to how the presence of Al Jazeera America enriches the landscape of broadcast news and offers viewers the chance to be better informed about the Middle East, it was on display last week, meaning the end of June, early July when you wrote this.
Yeah.
And has that continued, in your opinion, since then?
It has. And, you know, it's really something. I wrote that, I think, like Tuesday, July 7th, maybe?
No, it's July 3rd, actually.
July 3rd, okay. Yeah. Al Jazeera understood this story by the last day of June, July, or July 1st. They understood it when no one else understood that there was the potential here for what's going on now. Really, as a matter of fact, they were using terms like possible third intifada at the time, right away, because it was killing, in a way, these young men. And the Palestinian teen who was abducted was burned to alive, they found after the autopsy. They understood immediately that both sets of murders, the three Israeli teens and the Palestinian teen, crossed the line and what was going on. I was really impressed with them. Really impressed. David Schuster, a guy with a long history in American news, did a great interview that first night with a former consul general from Israel and a spokesman for the Electronic Intifada, a website. And you could hear it when by the way, each was 6 minutes and 1 second, and they had 12 minutes and 2 seconds for the segment. It was perfectly down the middle because a lot of people said, oh, Al Jazeera is going
to
hate Israel.
They're going to be.
No, none of that. In fact, Schuster really got into it with the guy from Palestine because he wasn't answering the questions and was making allegations that were not true. And he called him on it. Hmm. So that's what I wanted to point out. But, you know, I have to tell you something else since. Al Jazeera America did really well. It upsets me that nobody's watching. 15,000 people on average an hour in primetime. It's pitiful. Al Gore's current channel, which they bought to get into homes, was doing 30,000, and it was a joke.
What are they doing about advertising their existence to the American viewers?
Well, they're funded by the Emir of Qatar. They have deep pockets. People think they can go on forever this way because of the, you know, and part of that is stereotypical thinking. You know, Middle East oil money, you know, rich blah, blah, blah can go on forever. But, you know, last week they sent out a memo saying that they had to stop. It actually said Mayday in the subject field from the one of the senior vice presidents there, saying they had to cut back and they had to get senior management approval anytime they booked a studio for a remote, and that they had to start doing more anchors interviewing reporters and fewer guests, essentially, because the studio costs were and satellite costs were running out of control. So they're starting to feel a pinch about not getting any kind of serious revenue for this. But in terms of we as Americans, Dan, in a time when there is less and less international news from the mainstream press, here's a channel that comes along, and because in part because it feeds off Al Jazeera proper, Al Jazeera English, all of that vast Middle East infrastructure they have brings superb Middle East coverage to us, and people aren't watching. And I'll tell you, this is what upsets me. I really believe it. I believe it's because of Dick Cheney, and I believe it's because of Don Rumsfeld, and I believe it's because of the others in the Bush administration who branded it as a terrorist network because they, with others, cable cast the Bin Laden tapes. They labeled them a terrorist time at a time when we were really vulnerable after 9/11, and it stuck. And they can't get past that branding. And they also played this card about it's going to be anti-Israel. And I mean, it's really dirty kind of political branding that these guys did. And we all know how good Cheney and Rumsfeld are at that. You know what I would say to listeners of this station? If you want to let Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld tell you what to watch, then keep not watching it, folks, because that's what you're doing. But I also, one other point
but
on that.
One thing,
yeah,
I raised the question of advertising,
yeah,
right? Promoting Al Jazeera in America, your response was, that, well, they have deep pockets because of who's
funding them. Yeah,
but I don't see it. I don't. It doesn't have a presence in my mind in terms of trying to appeal to American viewers. I don't know where they do that. They take out full page ads.
Oh,
in the New York Times.
They have.
I mean, that's about it. That's all I've seen.
Listen, I think they have a terrible branding problem. I think they've done a terrible job of marketing themselves. Mm-hmm. They really have. You know, I have a statement from the president of the network, Kate O'Brien, who said to me, you know, if we just keep doing good journalism, people will find us because there's not so much of it anymore on cable TV. That's our plan, to keep doing good journalism. I like to hear that. As a journalist, I like to hear that. But I think they really need to get a way to brand themselves. I mean, they need to get out there. And it's very hard. It's very hard. One other thought, though, that's really struck me. I watched their reporter, and they always report, Dan. You know, a lot of the BBC especially shoots from above, like from a hotel room down on the streets. That's the British colonialist point of view. Al Jazeera's in the streets. They shoot right in the middle of the action. And I saw their reporters in the line of fire. To be fair, I also saw NBC's reporter in the line of fire holding up a camera screaming journalist in three languages as Israeli IDF forces were firing at them. There's a lot of reporters. Ben Weideman, CNN, got hit in the head with a rubber bullet. He did a brilliant report this weekend with parents fleeing Gaza after the Israelis told them, we're coming into your neighborhood, get out. And he followed those people as they tried to get out. You know, he saw them, he helped them flag down a cab. And an explosion, a bomb went off. You know, I thought it was about a mile away. But the three little kids in that family started screaming and shaking. It was one of the most brilliant reports I ever saw because you understood what happens to children, the post-traumatic stress they're going to suffer, the way they're jangled. I swear to God, the sound of that bomb, there was a little six-year-old girl, and her body vibrated with it, and she let out a scream that just, I mean, you know what, though? Think of this. Those reporters, men and women, there's a lot of women over there reporting too. They're standing and getting hit in the head with rubber bullets and stuff, and these bombs are going off around them. They're making less than Chelsea Clinton makes for NBC News. She's making $600,000. There's not one of them being paid half of that. That's American TV journalism.
David, is there any reason to believe that ratings might have improved during this last month, given what's happened here? Because I would think when a story in the Middle East becomes a flashpoint of news like this, that might be the time Americans try Al Jazeera America.
I'm smiling because you must be a journalist, Roderick, because I was just going to make that call today.
Yeah, to find out about whether ratings have improved.
That's exactly it.
Because I would think, okay, if you're going to check out Al Jazeera America, this would be the time to do it.
I think it might be hard to measure it. When you're that low, you know, when you're not doing one ratings point, Dan, when you're hashtags, as they say in the ratings book, it's hard to get a read on that. And what happens is once there's a big story like this, everybody else amps up. You know, CNN sends Wolf Blitzer to stand over there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it might not show, but that's exactly it. That's funny. I was walking a dog last night and thought, hey, I got to call him up and check on that. So here's Roderick's on air saying, hey, Zerwick, why don't you call him up and check on that?
Oh, we'll look for the Zeon TV blog to see if you follow up. You had an interesting blog I guess this was just yesterday, about the domestic crisis, sort of international, the border crisis here with all these unaccompanied minors coming across the border and what to do with those that have already arrived here. And your comment on this is the TV coverage kind of miss context.
Yeah.
Missed an opportunity to provide context and some history here.
Yeah, you know, it's astonishing to me. And I mean, one of the reasons it's astonishing to me is because in 1980, I covered this for the Detroit Free Press for a year. But there was, in 1980, there was the Mariel boat lift when the Cuban immigrants came, emigres from Cuba came here, and 125,000 of them in Florida. And then we found out that Castro, a lot of people were, you know, families, there were a lot of families, there were a lot of good, hardworking people wanted to come here just to get away from Cuba. But Castro also emptied some of his prisons and mental institutions and sent a lot of people here who he thought would cause problems for American society. Jimmy Carter, end of his presidency. This went on from, I think, April to October of 1980. It did, April to October 1980. Me and another reporter, it's all we did all year. We went to these camps, Fort McCoy in Wisconsin, Fort Chaffee in Arkansas, where Bill Clinton was the governor, and they rioted the people. They took these people, they sent them to these camps, usually military camps that weren't in much use. Fort McCoy in Wisconsin, in the middle of nowhere, was an old World War II camp. Dirty, drafty, barbed wire, endless mud. Sent these people in there and had Health and Human Services, FEMA, the famous, our great agencies, and then the Department of Defense, because soldiers were there guarding them, put them in these groups and put families with little kids, they didn't know who these people were, in with murderers, in with some of the most really bad, bad people. And when we got there, it was like a prison system, only instead of all being convicts, there were a lot of innocent children and there were horrible things happening to them. And you know what the people running the camps and the people in the government did? They lied their butts off to us. We wrote stories every week from these camps about the horrors. Finally, some of Carter's senior administrators, you know, let us come to Washington, talk to them, where they lied to us some more. But don't forget, this ended in October. In November was the election that Reagan came in, and there was this thing going on in Iran with the hot. I mean,
right.
Carter had a lot on his plate, but he had no plan.
So, what's your takeaway from that? That today it's 2014.
They
could have provided this context.
Welcome.
Because we've been here before. And how did the president handle
exactly.
it?
Exactly. I look at Obama and what his administration is saying. Oh, let's put him in camps in Western Maryland. Let's put him in camps in Nebraska.
Carroll County.
Yeah, Carroll County. And I'm like, welcome back, Carter. Mm. This is Carter. This is what you get with a president whose rhetoric and no planning. I mean, and I'm not saying, oh, Obama. I'm talking about his administration. We are seeing the same FEMA that we saw in Katrina on this. You know, it just doesn't get any better. If you know, I lay awake at night listening to C-SPAN. I listened to VA veterans hearing on a Baltimore office last night.
Oh.
I wanted to run down there and scream at the woman who was saying, it's just not in my DNA to do a bad job. I'm going to do a bad job. You got closets full of people's claims that some people are hiding and the person's still working there. What do you mean it's not in your DNA? It kills me. But when you see the level of human suffering, and Dan, I see this whole dance again. Hey, and I'm not a government critic. I'm a media critic. I looked at the talk show Sunday. Nobody mentioned Mariel. Nobody mentioned a boat lift as a precedent or a predictor of what's going to happen. And that's part of why we're so stupid and jangled as a nation.
Yeah, I don't know that we get much historic context.
Never anymore. Yes.
Maybe in the Israel Palestine conflict, we get some of it.
Some of it.
Some background.
Dan, that's what I did. I looked at this and I went, is it nobody remembers this? Is it who everybody else who covered this has either been cashiered out or is dead and I'm the last living Civil War soldier here? Cursed to have to tell this tale?
Let's take a call. Kevin in Baltimore giving us a ring. Is this Kevin Naff?
This is Kevin Naff.
Oh, I know Kevin.
Kevin,
hey.
How are you?
I'm great. Hey, I'm a fan of both of you guys.
Thank you.
It's a great, great conversation. I just wanted to weigh in on two quick things. First, I was just back from Israel in November on a press trip.
We should say Kevin Naff is, you're still editor, right?
Right.
Yes.
Of the Blade.
Correct.
Washington Blade. Okay. Great publication.
Oh, thanks. So I was there on a press trip in November, and we got to meet with some of the top journalists in the country, including the editor of the Jerusalem Post and a few others. And one of the complaints that they had about Western media coverage of all of this is that they claim, anyway, that Western reporters, American reporters in particular, are really only interested in stories that cast Israel in a negative light, that those are considered the prized stories for American press. And they had a real frustration around the way Israel gets depicted in on CNN and other mainstream outlets in America. And that one of the things that is not reported on, and we saw it firsthand, is the reluctance or refusal even of the Palestinians to compromise. That's really the issue here. And we just saw this the other day, of course, with the ceasefire that was rejected. And, you know, I don't know how helpful it is for Wolf Blitzer to stand on the edge of the Gaza Strip and you know, duck behind cars. I think it'd be more compelling if he actually went into some of these Israeli settlement towns and talked to the people there, as we did, and the obstacles that they're facing in terms of, you know, wanting to cooperate with Palestinian neighbors and being completely shut down. So that was one thing. And then the other thing, I loved the conversation about Arrow. I just can't believe
did?
That.
You did? I mean, do you understand it?
Do I understand Arrow?
Did we augment your understanding of the Arrow decision in the Supreme Court today?
Oh, yeah. No, I think you...
I thought David did a pretty good job.
You nailed it. Okay. All right. The one thing I made, and maybe I missed it because I tuned in a little bit late, but my understanding of copyright law is that there is a line in the copyright law that says, if you own the copyright, then you own every public rebroadcast of that copyrighted material. So it's not just the first, you know, broadcast, it's every broadcast. And that, to me, is the crux of it. And it speaks to this larger issue in our digital culture of, you know, people who think because it's online, it's free. And, you know, as the Blade editor, I've had to go after everybody from the Wall Street Journal to the Obama presidential campaign for stealing our photos.
Yes. Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah.
And it's crazy. You know, people think because it's online, oh, gee, it must be free. I can help myself.
No, I see the parallel. This company, Arrow, is pretty much going to go out of business, isn't it?
I think they've already shut down.
They're already shut down. I see the parallel now. It just led to this larger question I have about streaming in general and why there isn't just more of it.
Well, Kevin made a great point, too, when I mentioned copyright law.
Before you go, I just wanted to ask you a question. Have you already started writing reports about Israel for The Blade?
Yeah, I wrote a pretty extensive report when I got back in November.
Last year?
Yeah.
Okay. And so did you make a more recent trip there?
No.
Okay.
I'd love to. I'm actually in touch with some folks that I met over there.
Okay.
And there's an event coming up in August that I would love to get back to.
Okay, I was just wondering if you were writing some fresh stories off this latest crisis. That's what I would look for. But anyway,
we are. Actually, yeah. We are. Believe it or not, there's a gay angle to the story of the Palestinian boy who was killed. There was a story that was leaked in all over social media over there claiming that the Palestinian teen who died was gay and that he was killed by his family in an honor killing. None of that was true, and the gay community there is working really hard to overcome that story. But
wow,
yeah, it's a
that's
a mess
great. You guys,
right now.
Honest,
thank
Kevin,
you.
I, yeah. That's so great. People can and you're writing about that on your website. Folks can go. That's fantastic. That is.
Thanks for calling in, Kevin.
Yes.
And yeah, great conversation. Thanks, guys.
And Kevin, thank you so much for that point about royalties, because I was talking about owning it, but he's right. You know, Dan, owning subsequent plays of it. I mean, that's how people live in Hollywood. You know, you're in one show, but you get royalties each time the episode runs because it's such a lousy business. Otherwise, you'd starve. And people don't think about that. People just think, you know what? It's funny on this issue. If you've created something, Dan, if you write something or you've created something, You understand. You know, it's like the musicians. People go, well, that guy's such a progressive guy. Why is he against his music being stream free to everybody?
Right.
You know, and the guy goes, because I spent 6 years in a studio trying to get that sound right.
How was Aereo making money? Were people paying for the Aereo service?
They were charging
$8?
Yeah, I think. And now there is, you know, we said, you guys were saying they're through. I think, honestly, they are through. But there is a long shot that they're trying. Legally, they're trying to say that the Supreme Court ruling essentially defined them as a cable company. So now they have a right to get programming just like a cable company does.
Right, I saw that.
But what they're leaving out of that argument is cable companies have to pay retransmission fees and all that to get the content.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to be able to sell it for $8.
They have to be licensed too, right?
Yes, and nobody's going to sell it to them because they don't like them because they stole their content for 2 years.
Midday on Media with David Zerwick of the Baltimore Sun. When we get back, Diane Soya, and then we'll turn to the subject of Pam Oliver and her role at Fox Sports, her changing role there. 410-662-8780 is our number. We'll be right back. And welcome back. It's Midday on Media with David Zerwick. So Diane Sawyer is going to be leaving as anchor of the ABC World News at a time when that show has been doing pretty well against NBC and Brian Williams, which had dominated for some time.
Yeah, it's beating them in the demographic, the key demographic for news, which is 25 to 54-year-olds. And it's closing on them in overall viewership. And it's very hard to move the needle in the evening newscast. So under Sawyer, that newscast made terrific ratings gains. Now, part of it is that ABC Good Morning America is now beating the Today Show, and it's been doing it for months now, I think maybe the whole year. And so that sort of sets a cycle in motion where people who do watch those kind of shows might watch the morning show, go out to work, come home at 4 o'clock, and the channel is still set. You know, the clicker is still on that channel. They pick it up, and they stay with it. But she's done really well in terms of that. Now, a lot of people have said she does a softer newscast. I think softer is an adjective that's really loaded, and it's often directed towards women journalists somehow in a pejorative way. So I've kind of bristled about that. She has done, she has a different sort of agenda as managing editor of that newscast. But if you want soft, go to Puddin'Face Brian Williams. He is the worst. He has taken that newscast at NBC News and run it in the ground with his self-serving, puffed up, don't I have a great sense of humor, and the anchorman gets all the airtime demeanor.
If Diane Soya moves on to what she describes as a larger role at ABC, sort of a senior person doing big projects, big think kind of thing.
Yeah, right? My take on that is, look, it's announced as a promotion. It will be what she makes of it and what ABC, really what she makes of it.
Okay.
It could be an emeritus. It could be anchor emeritus if she doesn't do much with it. I think she will do a lot with it.
What makes you raise the question about whether this is the end of the big-time TV network anchor?
Dan, in the Tom Brokaw, Dan Rather era, when there was a change at the anchor desk, it was epic. It was like the Kremlin fell.
I remember.
You know?
Yeah.
Now, it's not even 3 hours of the news cycle on my beat, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Scott Pelley? Scott Pelley is larger than life? Scott Pelley is larger than a peanut. Scott Pelley is nobody. It's like an Undertaker talking, and he's awful. Scott Pelley, Brian Williams, and now David Muir. Does any of that strike awe in your... Does any of that say to you, this is the force of American journalism?
It's not Walter Cronkite.
They've downsized
and
diminished.
I like Pelley. I think Pelley's okay.
Pelley is driving that in the ground.
Really?
Pelley.
Why, because he's just boring? Or what is the newscast is boring? What are you saying?
Pelley got about 4 talking points from Edward R. Murrow's speeches, and he just keeps pounding them over and over. Listen, I covered Pelley in... You know how old I am? I covered Pelley in Dallas when he was at WFAN.
I know that.
You don't want to hear that.
Okay. You told us that story once.
Now I'm getting so
mad. Actually,
Rodericks is cutting me off. This is awful.
The biggest story about a woman in television is the Pam Oliver story.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that for a minute?
Sure.
What do you make of this? Pam Oliver, nearly 20 years, a sideline reporter on Fox's NFL broadcasts, being taken down to the second team at Fox Sports, and being replaced by Aaron Andrews, who came over to Fox from ESPN and is nearly 20 years younger, maybe not quite as.
You know what this is?
Yeah,
this is
15 years.
This
younger.
Is bad media reporters trying to gin up a controversy in the middle of summer.
You don't think there is one there?
Well, let me say this: do you know who's been championing sideline reporters to getting kicked in the head by people like Sean McManus from CBS Sports, Zurich? And Zurich says, judge them as journalists. Don't talk about them in terms of appearance. They matter. Sean McManus says, we don't need sideline reports.
Okay,
they don't matter.
What's happening here? Is this a promotion? You're calling
Pam
this a promotion?
Pam Oliver, if you read her quotes in these stories.
She's she's happy.
The guy in Sports Illustrated is a hot dog who wrote this story, and he's pumping his thing up. Listen, she's been doing this a long time. They didn't fire her. They gave her a nice job, and she's going to be making more money, and she has a chance to comment across the board. This is also people who don't like Aaron. Aaron has been a target of people, mainly men who write about her, who they want to put one woman against the other, and this is going to be a great story. No, I'm not weeping. You know what? When Pam Oliver says, hey, they treated me horribly. I hate this. This is a bad thing. This is wrong. I spilled my guts on those sidelines for 20 years talking to those morons. I let John Harbaugh lie to me for the last 10 years. I deserve better than this.
She's not saying it. She's saying that she's pleased to take on this new position.
I let puffed-up John Harbaugh tell me he's got that team under control for 10 years now when they're out every night doing crazy stuff.
The closest she came to criticizing Fox was saying that she wanted a 20th year on the sideline, and she didn't get it.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take a couple of calls. Linda in Ocean City, back on the subject of Al Jazeera. Thank you for calling, Linda.
Hi, Dan. I appreciate your work and David's reporting as well.
Well, that's nice.
I just wanted to let you know that there are some people out here that would really love to watch Al Jazeera every day. I live in Baltimore City most of the year and do not get cable, so it's not one of my choices. When I'm at a residence in Ocean City, of course, I have to have cable to get any kind of reception. And it is not listed in my package. I even had to bump up in order to get the Orioles. But even with that, I can't get Al Jazeera. So the only time I watch it is when I'm visiting my son in Philly. It's in his package, and I would love to watch it all the time.
Okay, just Linda, thank you. I appreciate you calling to say that, Linda. Someone else called in earlier, wanted to know actually how to spell Al Jazeera and where to find it. On television, Al Jazeera is A-L,
space.
And the second word, space.
J-A.
Thanks for adding the space.
J-A-Z-E-E-R-A,
Al Jazeera. And David, how do you watch it?
I'm in Baltimore City, and it's on my cable package. I'm also on DirecTV, and it's on my cable package. But I'll tell you what, that is a great, great call from Linda, because one of the reasons it has such a small audience is cable operators here have been really stinky about keeping them off, have been really dirty in hardball American business ways. Time Warner wouldn't put it on in New York. Oh, why? Oh, because Time Warner owns CNN and sees it as a competitor. They've lately relinquished under threats of lawsuit, and they're getting more access. But they're not on a lot of HD tiers. And so people who have HD, which is like almost everybody now, having a hard time with it. Linda, that's a great point. For others who might be wondering if you do, just go to Al Jazeera, that's one word, .com online, and right at the top of the homepage, it'll say, what's your zip code? Type in your zip code, and they'll tell you where you can see it in your area.
Okay,
and
try that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, David.
But it's a great point by Linda. Linda, it is hard for a lot of people. I had a lot of emails the last couple of weeks from people saying, Zurich, I read your stuff. I want to watch it. I've answered each of them individually, trying to help put them in touch, and I know how hard it is for some people to get it. And that's outrageous. That makes me mad, too. It really does.
Let's take another call. This is Ernest in West Baltimore. You're on Midday. Ernest, hi.
Thanks for taking my call. What is happening to the Palestinian people has been going on since 1948. It's just criminal, and it's genocide. And it's been going on because when they first, after the Balfour Agreement, and that happened because of World War I and that war, they allowed the Khazarian Jews to come to the United States, Palestine.
All right, we were talking about the news coverage, Ernest. What did you want to say?
The coverage is bad because it is pro-Israel. As 200 people been killed, 90% of them have been women and children. Houses blowed up, and nobody said anything. They didn't even say anything when Rachel Curry was killed, a 23-year-old white Jewish girl who was run over by a caterpillar or something. They didn't even say anything about that.
Okay.
And, I mean, this is, goes on and on. These people being killed. They're occupying the Palestinian land. They keep building homes. And they act like it's the Palestinians' fault.
Ernest, I understand that point of view. And you heard another point of view where people said it was anti-Israel. But here's the one thing I do have to say. When someone says, 190 Palestinians or 200 Palestinians killed, and that hasn't been reported. It has, in fact, been reported. And as I talked about, Ernest, very touching human stories from Gaza are being told by the cable channels. So it doesn't help the conversation to say nobody's reporting that. It's all over cable and network TV. But I understand your deeper point of view, and I understand your insistence that there be some historical context. I can agree totally with you on that.
Hey, one last thing before we leave you, David. Emmy nominations?
Oh, yeah.
Looking good for Baltimore-produced programs and for A Baltimore Boy.
Yes, House of Cards, Veep, Josh Charles. Really good news. Yeah, it really looks like Baltimore's going to be on that show again this year. Tough competition. I'm not saying they're going to win. But House of Cards really established Netflix this year. That and Orange is the New Black. Really established Netflix as the future of quality TV.
Yeah, streaming.
Yes.
Streaming.
Yeah, there's TV. One. There's one that
you pay a little for,
yes.
Right?
A little.
You know what you have to do this afternoon?
What's that?
You have to go contact whoever you contact for ratings information,
yes,
to find out if Al Jazeera is doing any better,
yep,
in ratings during this recent crisis in the Middle East.
Yeah, I'm glad we had a nice calm conversation.
That would be your next assignment, right? It's Midday on Media. The third Wednesday of every month, David Zerwick joins us here from the Baltimore Sun, where he serves as the media critic and writes the Z on TV blog. And you'll all be watching the blog in the next day or so to see if he reports on Al Jazeera ratings during this period, which is an idea we gave him here during our hour together. Right, David?
I'm not coming back. I don't need more work.
Well, thanks for being here, David.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. Yeah. Thanks.
And thank you, everyone, for tuning into our midday for today. That's our midday for this Wednesday. We're back again in 22 hours for another edition of our show. We certainly thank you for supporting us here. Open phone lines tomorrow in the first hour of the show. And the second hour of our show on Thursday, Rona Cabell is going to be with us in another edition of Midday on the Bay. Rona is back from food boot camp. We'll be talking about healthy eating, healthy growing of food. So see you again tomorrow. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
Midday's senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The associate producer, Michael Himowitz. Our interns are Brian Gilbert, Tyler Downey, Anna Muckerman, and Evelyn Feeney. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming available at wypr.org. Dan Rogic's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.